This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Hi, welcome to episode 9 of the Trash Compactor podcast, our podcast about all things Star Wars from the female perspective. I'm Roan, and I'm here with...
MC.
Man, episode 9. I can't believe that we're already at 9.
Can't believe that we've actually gotten through 9 of them without missing one.
Shh, don't say that, you're going to jinx us. But this month we're finally going to have a chance to talk all about Rogue One, beyond our initial squee. We've got a roundtable coming up with me and MC in April and our returning guest, Lepagus. But before we get to that, we need to take a step back and we're going to talk about episode 8.
As in episode 8 of the Star Wars movies, not the last
right,
episode of our podcast.
Not our episode 8, the real episode 8. So yesterday was kind of a big day. I was, hopping around doing my usual thing. And about 11 o'clock Eastern time yesterday, I happened to glance at Twitter. And I see this gigantic poster on the official Star Wars Twitter with the title of Episode 8. And I might have screamed. Because if you've been living under a rock, the title of Episode 8 is now officially Star Wars The Last Jedi. Sorry, I'm still very squeeful.
It is okay. No, I squeed when I read that. I mean, not only is it, it's like, oh my God, Luke might actually have some lines. But it's a really good title.
There's a lot to it. It's like,
yeah,
it's kind of like The Force Awakens in that it could mean so many different things. It could mean anything.
It's also The Last Jedi just for some reason harkens back to the old sci-fi movies to me. I mean, maybe it's because it reminds me of The Last Starfighter, which I really like.
Small difference there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the speculation is running wild. It was a little disheartening for me because the very first thing I saw someone say, the very first thing was, oh shit, Luke is totally going to die.
Yeah, but they've been saying that for a long time now. People are just keep on speculating on it. And honestly, considering, I hate to go dark but we've lost Han in episode 7 and now Carrie Fisher has unfortunately passed. I think that Luke might end up surviving.
Even if he wasn't necessarily going to begin with, which I think he was anyway, because damn it, I'm just, as I said to someone yesterday, I am sticking my fingers in my ears and denying any speculation otherwise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the first thing that someone pointed out that I hadn't thought about, because, of course, I hear The Last Jedi, and, of course, I think Luke, because, that, first of all, that was in the opening crawl of 7, mm-hmm. Luke Skywalker, The Last Jedi, and also because that was the thing in Return of the Jedi when Yoda's like,
Yoda called him the last of the Jedi.
Yeah, when I'm gone, the last of the Jedi you will be. But someone pointed out that the plural of Jedi is Jedi.
Yep.
So...
yeah, no, it could just be Luke. It could be Luke and Ezra and Kanan.
Right, they're going to bring them in. That would be awesome. Obviously, it could be Rey.
Yeah.
It could be Rey and Finn.
Yeah.
I would love it for it to be Rey and Finn. But if you wanted to strictly go, okay, no, it's just singular, I think there's still a lot of really interesting possibilities there, too. Especially in conjunction with Season 3 of Rebels, where they're really branching out into the various different areas of Force users that are not necessarily mm-hmm. Jedi.
Yeah.
I think it would be really cool to explore that from the standpoint of, yes, Luke is the last Jedi because what Rey becomes is not a Jedi.
Yeah.
It's something entirely different.
Yeah.
And I think actually Luke would be in favor of that because I just can't see him following the same path that...
Yeah.
That we got in the prequels. I just...
Yeah, the Jedi are just so dogmatic that, you know, I don't really see that being Luke's way of doing things. And Luke, attachment. I mean, that is, like, the big thing with the Jedi is that they're against attachment. And attachment has always been a plus for Luke.
I mean, that's been his saving grace throughout the entire series. And I am one of these people who I call myself... sometimes an uncritical fan, because it doesn't take a lot to make me squee, in case anyone's missed that. And I'm not like, I am generally willing to throw myself into the storyteller's hands and just accept and like, okay, that's where you took the story. I'm totally fine with that. You know, Han dying was upsetting, but didn't upset me from the standpoint of that should never have happened, which I know some people feel differently about.
Yeah.
For me, it felt, it worked. Because I'm basically willing to go where the storytellers take me. Now, that being said...
I know where you're going.
If we get to episode 8 and we find that Luke has somehow decided that attachments are all terrible and he's going to avoid them all, I will want to have words with somebody. And those words will pretty much be, did you not see the original trilogy? That's probably the only thing that could make me scream, did you not see the original trilogy, at the filmmakers.
One thing that came out in the official announcement from StarWars.com is that they are calling the episode movies the Skywalker saga.
Yes, I saw that.
Now, we had kind of an idea that they were doing that, but this is like the first official time I've actually seen the Skywalker saga, which frankly is a big fucking deal to me because, you know, that's like a proper name for it all.
And I have to say, as much as it's not my personal pet theory, watching the Rey Skywalker theorist fans be really excited has been kind of fun. Like, I don't have a dog in the fight whether or not it's real, but I'm glad you're excited by this.
Yeah. No, I'm still on the side of I would rather her not be a Skywalker. Because if she's a Skywalker, then I think Kylo Ren might die. And I'm sorry, I need some member of the Solo family to survive this all.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's right, too.
Yeah. Sorry, I just made things really dark.
No, it's totally fine. And I think that actually kind of fits in, though, with the rumor that flew across the internet a couple weeks ago that, you know, Disney had already decided to go ahead and CGI Carrie Fisher into episode 9, and how quickly Disney, who never confirms or denies anything, kind of stood up and went, no, that's not a thing that's happening. So that really does make me wonder what kind of rewrites we're going to see.
Yeah.
In episode 9. You know, maybe that Kylo might not have survived to begin with, and now, for reasons you just said, he might, because, Jesus, that is really bleak. So I don't know. I always kind of side-eye anybody who says they know exactly how it has to go, but now it's like there are so many options open.
They can't always know the way it's going to go, because there's always going to be things that get in the way, and people are going to change their mind on things, and there's going to be focus groups, so, yeah. No, I think these types of movies are always in flux, and we're not going to know what's going to happen in episode 8 until December 15th, and we're not going to know what happens in episode 9 until 2 years after that.
And there's actually a video out there of someone asking Mark, you know, basically going, okay, so what do you think about the title? And he was basically typically, he didn't give a single thing away, because he never does. But the most important thing we got out of that video, and I think we have to link to it, is that he talks in his sleep. That's what I took away from that video.
There was a post that was going around on Tumblr about what people thought Rian Johnson was going to name the movie, and I'm kind of sorry they didn't go with this. It was going to be episode 8, Luke Who's Back, Bitches.
That's pretty much what they called it, though. I saw that post. In fact, when I saw the title, that post was like the first thing I thought of.
There are also people speculating, and this relates back to Luke potentially dying, them using the red color for the Star Wars logo.
Yeah, but you know what? In some of the initial promo for Return of the Jedi, they used mm-hmm. red titles.
Well, I mean, often with the different episode movies, they will use, like, a different color. Like, the color that I often associate with Return of the Jedi is kind of like a green color.
Yeah, no, you're right. But if you go back and you look at the really early promo, it was red.
Back when it was still Revenge of the Sith?
Even right...
Not Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Jedi. Yes, it started out as red when it was Revenge of the Jedi. And then when they changed it to Return of the Jedi, it was still red for a little while. And then mm-hmm. it changed to the titles that we, of course, now know and love. Yeah. So, first of all, again, everything's in flux. And I don't know how much weight I would put on the, oh, it's red, that means something. I'm really disheartened at how many people are saying, this means Luke has to die. And some of them are saying it really gleefully. And some of them are saying it like, no, it can't possibly happen. And getting themselves all worked up into a tizzy and being upset like a year before the movie comes out. And so really all I have to say to that is that's like looking at the title Captain America, the Winter Soldier and going, dude, Bucky is totally going to get wasted in that movie.
Yeah.
And because that's what the title is. It's yeah. basically, again, another Tumblr post was like, I'm really excited about going to see Star Wars Luke. And of course, I think it's really funny because I'm such a fucking hypocrite that I've been the one who said all along, okay, the sequel trilogy is not about the original trio. And that's true. But I'm also ridiculously excited that he clearly is going to be like the focal point of this movie, if not necessarily like the lead. And I'm sure he's not the lead. I wouldn't expect him to be.
Even in The Force Awakens, Luke is one of the focal points of the movie. He's just not in it.
We just never see him.
Yeah, everything is geared towards trying to find him. And we are now in the second act where it's like, okay, we found him.
Now what?
So they have to actually do something major with that. I'm thinking possibly by episode 9, they will pull back on Luke's involvement. It will be the passing the reins over.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to be in episode 8 a lot.
Yay, I'm so excited. I did have a moment last night talking to a friend of mine, just the realization that I'm going to be sitting there in the theater, and I swear to God, when he opens his mouth to say his first line, I will probably burst into tears. I'm not even lying. I will probably start to cry. So I'm just very excited right now.
Oh, I'm excited too. I can't wait to see this. And we're going to start getting buried in Star Wars Episode 8 news.
Bury me in every bit of it. All of it, please. But no speculation.
No spoilers either. No spoilers.
That's right. So yeah. So basically, God, we have to love living in this time period. After talking about this brand new exciting news about the Star Wars movie that's coming out this year, now we're going to switch gears in a little bit, and we're going to talk about the Star Wars movie that came out last year, because we get one every year now.
So we're going to go over to the news now?
Yep.
This is MC, and this is what's happening in the galaxy. With the announcement of The Last Jedi as Episode 8's official title, speculation has now turned to when we will see the first footage from the newest saga film. There was heavy speculation of the Super Bowl as a potential candidate, but this was squashed by sources from Star Wars News Net and Pablo Hidalgo. The current speculation is the April Star Wars Celebration in Orlando. This would align with previous teasers for The Force Awakens and Rogue One appearing in April. As of now, this is all speculation. Filming on the Han Solo Star Wars movie has begun, with co-director Chris Miller tweeting that Han shot first. He has also posted a picture of the clapboard, featuring the stand-in title for the movie, Red Cup, referencing the plastic cups manufactured by Solo. Woody Harrelson has also been announced to be playing Han Solo's mentor. In an interview with Vulture, Mark Hamill full-throatedly defended the Star Wars prequels, focusing on Jake Lloyd's performance as Anakin Skywalker. He said the 10-year-old only did what George Lucas asked of him. While Hamill has issues with Lucas, he loves him and would never speak against him. New books have been announced, filling in the backstories of several Rogue One characters. Rebel Rising by Beth Revis will cover Jyn Erso's childhood being raised by Saw. Guardians of the Wills by Greg Rucka follows Chirrut Imwe and Baz Malbus following the Empire's takeover of Jedha. Both books are available for pre-order and will be available on May 2nd. The season of The Force has begun at Disneyland Paris. bringing special Star Wars events to the park, including a First Order march, stormtrooper interactions, and a projection show on the Hollywood Tower Hotel. This event runs until March 26th. Hasbro has announced a new wave of Rogue One and Rebels figures to be released this spring. Figures in the set of 3.75-inch figures includes Fenn Rau, Lieutenant Salfa, and Galen Erso. The exact release date is unknown, but current speculation is Roan will be out that day to pick up Galen. In another kind of toy news, Nuckazook released a short film, Darth Vader vs. Buzz Lightyear. This 4.5-minute movie features a battle between the Star Wars villain and Toy Story hero. The short film was directed by Andrew McMurray and stars Chase Rackley as Darth Vader and Derek Duncan as Buzz Lightyear. Tony Dow, best known as Wally Cleaver, has signed on to the movie The Lion Kings. The movie focuses on a group of Star Wars fans camping out in front of TCL Chinese Theater, vying for a cameo in the new Star Wars movie. The Lion Kings is written and produced by Bill Rickback and Steve Rubin and will begin filming in late spring. The Great Lakes Garrison of the 501st Legion gave a special send-off to Beau Villard Chan and his family as they were going off on vacation. Costume members saw the Villard Chans off at the airport, taking pictures and even having a lightsaber duel with 10-year-old Beau. Beau has microvillus inclusion disease, an extremely rare and potentially fatal disease. The family's Disney cruise was courtesy of Make-A-Wish Michigan. Mark Hamill tweeted his best wishes to the family. Lucasfilm has put to rest the rumor that they will be CGI-ing Carrie Fisher into Episode 9. Lucasfilm released the following statement. We want to assure our fans that Lucasfilm has no plans to digitally recreate Carrie Fisher's performance as Princess or General Leia Organa. Carrie Fisher was, is, and always will be part of the Lucasfilm family. She was our princess, our general, and more importantly, our friend. We are still hurting from her loss. We cherish her memory and legacy as Princess Leia, and will always strive to honor everything she gave to Star Wars. While Princess Leia might not appear in any Star Wars films after Episode 8, she will live on forever in the hearts of feminists everywhere. On January 21st, the women's marches happened all over the globe. A frequent sight at these marches was the face of Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. Well known as a staunch feminist and opponent of Trump, since Carrie Fisher's death, Leia has become a prominent image to protest the new president. General Organa has been a symbol of resistance and rebellion since 1977, and is an even stronger one today. That's all for the Trash Compactor news. Links to more information on the stories we've reported on can be found in the show notes. If you have any tips, email us at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com.
Lyra Erso had an unshakable faith in the Force, and although she couldn't use it, believed she could feel it in other living things. The last time Jyn Erso saw her mother, Lyra gave her daughter a kyber crystal and told her to trust in the Force. But long before Lyra Erso helped protect her daughter, she was keeping an eye out for her husband, Galen Erso, and helped uncover Orson Krennic's true motivations for Galen's kyber crystal research, a planet-destroying weapon. Lyra, who was an environmental impact specialist and a cartographer, met Galen on an expedition to find kyber crystals on Espinar. The outgoing Lyra and the introverted Galen hit it off right away, and they married shortly thereafter. By the time Lyra was pregnant with their first child, the two of them were working for Zerpan Industries on Vault. When the Separatists took over Vault, the Ersos were taken prisoner in an attempt to force Galen to go to work for the Separatist cause. In the months ensuing, Lyra gave birth to Jyn in captivity. To their surprise, they were rescued by Orson Krennic and the Galactic Republic. Krennic began to use the rescue and his long friendship with Galen to manipulate Galen into working for the former Republic, now Galactic Empire. While Galen trusted his old friend that his kyber crystal research was solely going to be used for energy production, Lyra had her doubts and pursued them. While Galen worked on his projects, Lyra uncovered information that the Empire was doing much more with his research. Planetary environments were being destroyed, scientists were being silenced and disappeared. Lyra was also the one who realized that the large sample of kyber crystals that Galen was given to work with could only have come from Jedi lightsabers. While Krennic worked to undermine her, both with the new Empire and her husband, Lyra covertly traveled the galaxy and gathered enough evidence to convince Galen that the Empire was weaponizing his work for the creation of the Death Star. Working with the rebel Saw Gerrera, she got the Ersos off Coruscant, where they went into hiding on Lemoo. 4 years later, Orson Krennic found the Ursos on their quiet farm. Lyra instructed Jin to hide and then tried to defend her family by assassinating Krennic. After shooting him in the shoulder, she was killed by Krennic's death troopers and Galen was taken into custody. Lyra's legacy lived on in Jin, who kept her mother's final gift of the Kyber Crystal, which indirectly led not only to the formation of the team that would become Rogue One, but the salvation of the Young Rebel Alliance. Transmissions will resume. I try to push, try to keep us all down and hold that, but we will never see the truth around. Hi, and welcome to our discussion on Rogue One, a Star Wars story. I'm Roan, and I'm here with...
MC.
April.
Lepagus.
Yay! We're finally able to come back to this after a really sad and unexpected detour last month. I know right after the movie came out, MC and April and I were able to do a quick reaction segment, and now's our chance to get a little more in depth with Gus with us. Hello, Gus.
Hello.
Glad to have you back for a happier reason. Yeah. And now that we have time to think about it, and some of us have seen the movie again, some of us have read Catalyst, so obviously we're going to get spoilery for both of those. I think the first thing I want to talk about is, like, this is the first anthology movie. And so this is, like, the first of who knows how many. And I'm really curious, like, what that holds for the franchise. Like, you know, are we going to see, like, more different genres of movies in the anthologies? How are they going to fit into the world? Are you guys excited about anthology movies now? Or
meh.
So what do you think?
Well, in terms of this one, I think this is a really strong first entry into the anthology because it's so different than all of the other, than the ones that they've announced. Like, they've announced Han Solo, and I'm like, oh, well, I've seen, you know, four movies with Han Solo in it, so I don't really know if I need any more of that. But this is so different. This is, you know, you have, like, the saga movies, and it's just, like, you know, the Skywalkers fucking up the galaxy.
Hey! Some of them were trying to make it better, thank you very much.
They fuck it up before
they fix
it.
There was still a Skywalkers fucking up a lot of the galaxy in this movie.
That's true.
I mean, technically.
Yeah, but, you know, this is mostly focused on, it's what TV Tropes would call a Lower Decks episode.
Oh, yeah. And we'll link to that, because that's...
Yeah, instead of being about the generals in the war, it is about the people that are really on the ground, you know. Because we do get, like, the, you know, the Battle of Hoth and the Death Star runs, where you see these, you know, very quick shots of people, you know, fighting in X-Wings or whatever. And then they die off, but, you know, the main characters are always okay. And this is kind of like, this is like an entire movie about those kinds of characters. And
then
they all appreciate that.
And then they all die off. you know, I think for me, this was a great first entry just because it's so saga adjacent. Like, if it brings in, like, if you're excited about the saga movies, you're still going to be excited about this because it's so connected.
I'm still, I mean, I'm still sort of on the fence about the Han Solo movie, but this one.
Yeah, you and me both.
This one made me have a little more faith in the anthology movies, and I enjoyed it so thoroughly. And I think, like I said, I don't know if I said this in the other thing, but my husband, who is not super into Star Wars, really enjoyed Rogue One. He didn't find it as boring as he finds some of the others.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then my best friend told me that after watching Hail Caesar, she actually does have a lot more faith in, like, why Alden Ehrenreich was cast. So I need to check that movie out to see, like, if I agree with her on that. So, but yeah, I do think it was a very strong first entry and, like, gives me a lot of faith in sort of what they're going to do going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to, I think the anthologies will probably be stronger when they focus on a story like this rather than a character. Like the Han Solo movie, the Boba Fett movie, which I don't get, but okay.
Is that for real?
You know, I think if
that for real, or is that speculation?
That's speculation.
No, that's for real. They're going to do that after the Han Solo movie. Gross. That's what I've heard.
Oh, why? Why, God, why?
I mean, maybe it's maybe it is speculation, but I've heard that that's the lineup. So
yeah, well, at the moment I think it's speculation, but it's speculation that's been thrown around so much that people think that it's absolutely, you know, locked in. It's because the fanboys want it so much. But
why?
I don't know why.
Sorry, we've been over this before. None of us are that impressed with Boba Fett.
I was going to say, that's not the reason I believe that it's going to happen, but I definitely believe it's going to happen.
I'm sure they'll get to it eventually. No, instead, give me the Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Seriously! So, yeah, we've talked about this a little bit, but there are some huge differences between this and the Saga movies. You know, just thinking of, you know, we were told going in that this is a war movie.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. it definitely was. And just the whole, like, the Saga movies are so black and white. And so, like, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys. And, you know, look, they're literally wearing black and white. So there's no question as to who is who. But this mixes it up a little bit more. I mean, certainly it's still obvious who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. But some of the bad guys maybe aren't so bad, and some of the good guys do some things that kind of make you go,
wah. One of our main protagonists gets introduced murdering a couple
yes.
of people.
Like, that was that really just woke me up to, like, oh, this is a different kind of movie. Like, right away with Cassian.
Yeah, that.
You also get some of the Rebel Alliance saying, it's like, oh yeah, you got to kill Galen Erso.
Yeah.
Don't bother saving him.
That was the other thing, is we see the Alliance leadership not being like all sunshine and light and not all in agreement, and, you know.
Yeah, that was, I thought, was really interesting. And it was a very odd moment, because, like, it clearly Mon Mothma, who's more in charge. What was that? The name of the guy who told Cassian to murder Galen.
The guy that Petrie played. God, what was
it? We can call him Petri Dish.
Yeah.
anyway, Petri Dish, kind of going behind Mon Mothma's back in order to tell Cassian to kill him, I thought was a weird note, and definitely more morally ambiguous.
Yeah.
It really gave a clear sense that the rebellion was fraying. You know, that it was not in a strong, good place where they're like, hey, these are the good guys and they're obviously going to win. It's like, no, these are a bunch of insurgents that are running scared and are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. So it's his General Draven
I just Draven. Looked that up too.
And
I prefer
Petri
Dish.
Yeah, definitely.
Also with the introduction of, well, I mean, not introduction because he was in Clone Wars, but with the reintroduction of Saw Gerrera.
Yeah.
Who, yeah. you know, is on our side, but you're kind of like, dude, don't be on our side. and then, of course, obviously, there's the end, if we want to talk about differences in tone.
Yeah.
Where, yay, the good guys save the day, and then die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Horribly and sadly, and I'm never, ever, ever going to be over that last shot on the beach as long as I live.
Yeah.
Just back on the topic of the rebels having, you know, disagreeing ideologies, I think it really fits in with what we've learned from the Rebels TV show, in that there are all these different rebel cells, and it's only just now on Rebels that they're starting to get into the idea of the Rebel Alliance. So,
yeah
there would be more extremist groups and clashing amongst the leadership. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing that the Rebel Alliance is able to get as far as they do.
Yeah, I love, because I just finished reading Asuka last night, and, like, it kind of struck me as funny that Bail doesn't, like, when Asuka's like, yeah, let me be your head of intelligence, and he's like, oh, yeah, sure, I don't have one of those. That's awesome. Like,
oh, good Lord.
That's troubling.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So is that how Ahsoka becomes Fulcrum?
Yes.
See, I need to read this.
It's so good. It's a really, 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 really good book. And again, it's like,
oh, and apparently, little trivia point. Apparently, Cassian Andor was also Fulcrum at some point.
Huh.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely more a spy than he is like a soldier.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I loved, is that at the end, you know, all of the troops that went with them to Scarif were those guys. They were the guys who were doing the morally gray stuff in the shadows, who basically...
They were the rogues.
You know, and they were the ones who were like, you know, we want to kind of make up for some of the things we've done that we feel bad about. It was just, I love that kind of storyline. And plus the whole notion that the Rebel Alliance had this entire group of, you know, guys who worked in the shadows and did the shady stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically their own suicide squad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well...
So, and, you know, we're talking about the characters. Obviously, this is... the Star Wars movies are getting more diverse, and this is probably about the most diverse so far.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're excited about that, but I know not everyone has been. It just seemed like... I don't know, like a non-issue to me watching these characters. It was like, well, these are the characters. This all makes perfect sense to me.
I mean, it was way more conspicuous to me the lack of women of color.
Yes.
Like
yes.
Every person of color was a dude. Right. Which, and they all, I mean, I wouldn't exchange Riz Ahmed or, you know, Donnie Yen or anybody for anyone else. They all did a phenomenal job. But it was kind of like, you know, there's Jin... And there's Mon Mothma, and there's one other lady at the council.
She was
a woman of color, but like other than that, it was kind of weird. But yeah, I saw a lot of backlash before the movie came out. I saw almost nothing about it afterwards.
Yeah.
So maybe the white supremacists who were mad about it were happy that everybody died. I don't know.
Didn't go see it.
Yeah, I did see one post talking about it was a response to. People that she'd seen saying that they couldn't empathize with the characters, and those people blamed it on lack of backstory or whatever. I started to wonder because, you know, there have been studies that have shown that it is harder for white people at times to empathize with people of color. And I wondered if that had anything to do with it, plus the sort of fact that Jin's character, even though she is white, is playing a very different sort of female character.
She's playing a stereotypical male's role go back and watch the first Star Wars movie. Just like put out of your mind everything that you find out in Empire and Jedi. Nobody really has that much of a backstory.
No.
You know, Luke is a dirt farmer. Leia's a princess with plans.
Get right.
He's a fucking dirt farmer. and Han is a smuggler.
Yeah.
And that's all you know about
They were
them.
Character archetypes.
Yeah.
And so that's
yes.
why people felt like they knew them is because they were archetypes.
Yeah.
I think the difference with Rogue One is Jin is definitely an archetype, but she is an archetype that is usually played by a guy.
Yeah.
And you know, she is the reckless, reluctant... I don't want to get involved in this. I mean, she's kind of a
major
female
daddy
Han Solo.
Issues.
Yeah.
Daddy issues.
She's very much, a female Han Solo in a lot of ways.
And this is kind of what I thought was strange. A very early review, I think, from either The Guardian or The Telegraph, said that Jin and Rey were the same type of character and called the
quote
spunky. And I was like, spunky is the last adjective I would ever use to describe Jin Erso, like, ever. Like, and I think it's just.
I was going to say she's. Not, I mean, she's scrappy.
Yes, scrappy is way more like. And
I'm not sure that I'd call Rey spunky.
Yeah,
in a way,
I wouldn't call Rey spunky.
Yeah, I guess not. But it's more. Yeah, they're very different. Even like their motivations for being reluctant to join are very different, and like it's just I don't know. I just it made me. Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of like this goes beyond just. Casting two women who look alike. You know, this is basically people not being willing to see the nuances between female characters, you know, because obviously
I mean,
if you have
to be fair sorry,
go ahead,
keep going.
I mean,
I
you know, because you have male characters who look alike all the time and they're very easily distinguished generally or given that chance, but I don't know, it was very odd.
I was gonna say, to be fair, the Star Wars universe does have four main female characters who all look identical.
Yeah, that is
not like
true.
Similar. They look identical.
Yeah, no, that is totally true, and it is infuriating, and it continues to be infuriating. But it's just kind of
especially the fact since only two of them are related.
Yeah,
it's very weird.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, yes.
Yeah.
Although I will say I think it's kind of. I was never on the Jin and Luke are Rey's parents bandwagon.
Oh, God, no.
And I found that bandwagon got a little bit more strident as the movie kind of approached. And there was, again, everybody knows that I'm not a very nice person. So I will say there was a little schadenfreude when I was like, that's clearly not going to happen.
Gus. I walked out of the theater, and my very first thought was, Jin is definitely not Rey's mom. Thank God.
Yeah, pretty much. So
I said that theory blew up really well.
Wah, 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 wah.
Okay, well, we're all officially terrible.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
In terms of characters, I think Chirrut was super important to bring into the Star Wars movies.
I loved him.
Not just because he's a great character, but because... they have borrowed so much from Asian cinema for the Jedi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually having an Asian actor come in and be able to bring some of the Asian cinema to the Star Wars movies, I thought was really awesome. And getting Donnie Yen to do it, who's just so fucking amazing.
And even beyond that... really good. Even beyond that, what they've also done is done what they're still doing in Rebels in expanding the Star Wars kind of theological universe of
there are
lots of different ways to interact with the Force.
Yeah. One thing that I saw that was really interesting is that apparently Donnie Yen, it was his idea to A, give Chirrut a sense of humor, and B, to make him blind. So that those were two things that he did.
I love it. Well, because that was the thing.
Well, and because he kind of called out, he said, "Yeah, I didn't really want to play another Asian mystic monk," and I was like, "Ooh, good point."
Well, that was the thing. I mean, all we got from the preview was that that he was that guy. He was the blind monk character, and to see him in his first scenes just be an absolute smartass was the honestly for me the most delightful surprise of the movie.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the moment when he was like, "Are you kidding? I'm blind."
It was so great.
I completely finished falling in love. I had already started, and that just knocked me over the edge the rest of the way.
Yeah.
So he's a blind mystic monk, but he's a hothead, a smartass, and also really gay.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Married.
Oh, yeah. Baze Malbus.
Yes.
Poor man. I felt so bad for Baze, like, throughout the entire movie. I was just like, I'm sorry, dude. I know he's hot, but, like, you deserve better than this.
And Baze is also such a great character in that he subverts so much what you expect from him because he is this kind of scary looking guy with this big ass gun, and he's the one trying to keep the monk under control.
Yep. And he's such a, like, he's so incredibly sweet. I mean, there's the little sister comment that he has with Jin, but he's also, like, clearly, like, you know, he's cynical, but he's incredibly just... He's clearly a very kind-hearted person. Again, I feel like we didn't get nearly enough time with any of these characters to get enough kind of coherent characterizations. But the actors were so good.
Yeah.
There was one theory that I saw that I hope that this is, like, I buy into this and it absolutely breaks my heart, was this notion that Baze had kind of lost his faith a little bit as things got really bad. And Chirrut was the one, you know, kind of trying to bolster that. And so what the theory that I saw was, you know, how Chirrut's thing was always, I'm one with the Force is with me. Mm-hmm. And then when he died, Baze picks it up and says, the Force is with me, I'm one with the Force. And I'm getting chills. The meta that I read suggested that that was the correct response.
Yes, I saw that.
And that he had not, he'd stopped giving that response through the years.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But then once he died, he picked it up and started giving the right response again.
I have to admit, the first time I saw the movie, I completely missed that Baze was a former Guardian of the Wills.
Well, they only say it once. Yeah. So, yeah.
I thought he was just like some random mercenary that for some reason was protecting Chirrut, and we know what reason that was. But yeah, then the second time I saw it, it suddenly all made sense to me. And it's like, oh, he's this disillusioned guardian. Oh, okay. Now the storyline's all like falling into place and it's really beautiful.
This actually is a movie that does reward multiple viewings, which surprised me a little bit. But it's, especially since a lot of the character work in there is kind of subtle and kind of, it sneaks up on you. Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about those two.
Yeah, they were pretty great.
I have a lot of feelings about everyone.
I was going to say, like, can we talk about Bodhi?
Oh my God, let's talk about Bodhi.
Oh God.
I mean, are we done talking about the monks? Because I could talk about the monks for another 20 minutes.
We'll probably come back to them because they're all
they're
giant,
all pretty
massive
great.
Ball of amazing characters.
Yeah.
Yes, I completely agree. But like Bodhi, I think the moment that I fell in love with him was when he got really he was put in front of Saw Gerrera, who we should also definitely talk about.
Yeah.
But was like, you know, no, he didn't take that from me. I gave it to him. And he was just like very insistent. And he was he reminded me so much of like kids who were like caught doing something that they didn't think was wrong, but like their family is punishing them. And they're like, no, wait, I was doing the right thing. Yeah. And like getting very irate. And I was just like, oh my God, you're so adorable.
Yeah.
So
I really need them to write a novel about Bodhi's defection because there is so much there.
Mm-hmm. I agree. His relationship with Galen is really fascinating.
Oh, don't get me started in there. I ship that so fucking hard. I can't even tell you how hard I ship that.
I've actually seen people bring up, and this is, I'm not sure if I agree with it, but I think it would be very interesting to, is something interesting to think about, is that they felt that the movie may have actually been better narratively if Bodhi had been the protagonist. And it had started
definitely.
With him.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and I was like, that actually, that is a...
Well, yeah, I was going to say,
at the very least, I would read the hell out of that fic.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if you think about it technically, and, like, we'll talk about Jin later, but, like, she's not necessary to the movie.
No,
she really isn't.
Like, the reason that she's brought in is to introduce Cassian to Saw.
Yeah, and they could have figured out another way to do that.
Well, yeah, and that's a very thin thing, like, to say, like, that really doesn't make any sense as a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that being said, if Jin had been the pilot or if Bodhi had been the main character, it might have made a little bit more sense and been a little bit less of a crowded movie. But,
yeah,
I mean, then you would have had to have at least, you know, an hour devoted to the defection rather than starting the movie with the defection.
That
so,
is, yeah.
I don't
know. The thing about Bodhi that I saw on the screen but didn't put into words until I saw someone else say it is that this is kind of the first time we've seen a character in Star Wars who pretty clearly is suffering from a lot of anxiety, who, you know, isn't 3PO.
Yes.
Even before he gets his mind, you know.
Yeah, yes. I mean, this is a nervous guy, and he has every reason in the world to be really nervous. I mean, he's defecting, and... Mm-hmm. So he not only has to steer clear of the Empire, now he's in front of these crazy-ass guys trying to convince them that, no, really, I'm on your side.
Yeah.
Please don't kill me.
Yeah. Well, and then his hometown gets blown up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but he keeps going, and he does it anyway. And that's just... His story arc just kills me. It's just...
I know.
And then at the very end... I just made this post on Tumblr the other day. The fact that his last words are, "This is for you, Galen."
That's true. I didn't remember that.
I have too many feelings. I just can't. I mean, whatever the relationship was there, if you want to ship it or if you don't, and God knows I do, because here we have these two very sad, very unhappy people trapped working for the Empire who somehow find one another and find a way to fuck everything up. How do you not love that story? But... Just the fact that they did find each other in whatever sense and saw someone who had similar doubts to them and found a way to work together and to succeed even though they both die is just, I don't know, I have feelings.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great relationship that unfortunately we didn't get to see. So, I mean, like, this is more of a general comment. I think that objectively, in terms of writing, in terms of style, this is probably what I would consider the best Star Wars movie, just in terms of how it was made. It still had a lot of problems, and one of them was that a lot of the scenes that would have been great to see were just kind of talked about. Yeah. And that was really frustrating, you know, but one of them is definitely, I would have loved to have seen at least one scene between Bodhi and Galen.
Yeah.
But alas.
I would say that this is probably, I would call it the most mature rather than the best, you know, the saga movies are all very kind of, you know, paint by numbers, hero's quest stories. And this one does have a lot more nuance to it. And I think there's, you know, it's, you know, nuance in the story and nuance in the characters. And so, yeah,
I see what you mean. And I mean, this is just my opinion. I'm not going to fight anybody over in the streets over which Star Wars movie is the best. Right. Although I've seen so many lists these days.
What are you doing in fandom,
like,
then? Jesus.
I'm going outside.
There is no
and
way to
walks.
Win that fight.
Yeah, exactly.
No way to win it.
Because it's all opinion. Yeah. Even informed academic opinions are still opinions. So,
yeah.
You know.
One of the things that I really liked about it, and we could talk about the characters all day, but we really can't, even though we could. One of the things that I thought was fun about Rogue One were all the little call-outs and callbacks that we got to the other movies. Whether it's, you know, characters showing up that were like, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you listened very close to the announcements in the background, you heard a lot of familiar names.
Yeah, Antilles.
Chopper. General Syndulla.
Chopper from Star Wars Rebels, which is a cartoon, actually showed up. He's in the background. You see him running around. And yes, General Syndulla, that has been confirmed that they are talking about Hera.
Yes! I didn't know that.
Yes.
But I'm so glad.
I'm fairly certain Hera's I saw fine. Pablo confirm that, yes, that is Hera.
That's awesome.
I love Hera so much.
Which makes sense because we do see the ghost flying around during the fight scene.
Yeah.
So now we know at least Hera survives Rebels. Woohoo!
if not the Death Star battle at Scarif.
Shut
up. You know.
Yes, she
I'm does. Just saying. actually, speaking of which, I thought it was really interesting. Somebody mentioned that in the scene with the X-Wing fighters on Scarif, some of the footage from the deleted footage from New Hope was put in there, and some of the female pilots were there, as well as some of the male pilots, but like a lot of the female pilots. Nice. And I thought that was really cool. I remember watching that scene and being like, the coloring is a little different on that, whatever. And just kind of going with
footage.
It.
And they also reused Gold Leader and Red Leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I thought was very cool.
And the thing that really, there are a couple things, like, in hindsight that really kill me about how they used the all the X-Wings and everything else is that, okay, first of all, we see why Luke gets the call sign Red 5, because Red 5 gets his ass blown out of the sky. Mm-hmm. We also find out, like, when they were showing pilots in blue jumpsuits, I'm like, what the fuck? Why are there blue jumpsuits? There were not blue jumpsuits. Well, it's because Blue Squadron died on Scarif. And also just the fact that now we know how Rogue Squadron got its name just absolutely kills me.
I know. I do like the idea, though, that, like, because it's one of those things where just logistically this movie would have been a real, real challenge. And we'll talk about some of the things that they had to do in order to jerry-rig it a little bit later. Because they're inserting a story that was referenced very glancingly. I mean, it's Rogue One is fanfic, you know. It's expanding on a story that was referenced. You know,
it's the first line of
exactly.
the opening crawl.
Yeah, there's really nothing else that you can kind of insert into the original movies other than, like, you know, okay, what if Rogue Squadron was in honor of Rogue One, the Rogue One team that lost their life at Scarif? What if, you know, we were able to, you know, make the Death Star's weapon based on kyber crystals. Well, now we can have, you know, so it's like,
well, for
it's
what
really
it's worth, the kyber crystal thing is old EU stuff.
Oh, no. Well, no, but that's what I mean, is that they repurposed it into the movie in order to have Jedha and in order to blow up Jedha in order to, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. they created new, how do you put it? They created new things that were supposed to have happened within the universe before the original movie ever started.
Yeah. And they
and that's
did
tricky
it so
to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. just the way, like, they really captured the whole late 70s aesthetic on Yavin 4, which is amazing to me. but I mean, you looked at these guys running around and you're like, this would not have looked out of place.
Yeah.
I was actually watching some sort of, you know, behind the scenes trivia thing. And actually, even in the way they filmed it, they went and got a camera back, you know, like a vintage camera for filming
it.
Yeah.
Oh, they did it on film.
Yeah, which honestly, that explains to me. I've seen the movie both in 2D and I saw it in IMAX, and I kind of hated it in IMAX. Yeah. I mean, I love the movie still, but I didn't really like, you know, the visuals weren't really great. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, after I found this out, it's like, oh, of course, it was made like a 1970s movie. No wonder it doesn't look good in IMAX.
I do really like their commitment to keeping the movies on film. Because, you know, The Force Awakens mm-hmm. was also shot on film. And mm-hmm. I really like that a lot. It also kind of helps maybe prevent us from ugly high frame rate bullshit at some point.
Yeah.
So the one of the things that they did obviously in trying to make this fit into the time frame was they essentially brought at least one actor, well, two, but not intentionally, back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, which we could probably talk. A lot of people were very creeped out by Tarkin. I kind of loved it.
I was creeped out by Tarkin really well. Because you're supposed to be creeped out by Tarkin.
Yeah.
He's creepy. He was creepy in the original movie.
I thought Tarkin looked fine.
Yeah.
I had absolutely no problem with him. And I was so, when they just showed him from behind, I'm like, oh my God, Tarkin's there. Oh my God, Tarkin's there. And then he turned around and I'm like,
and you're like, oh my God, Tarkin's there.
I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I actually didn't realize it was CGI until after I saw the movie.
I
just thought it was an actor that looked a whole lot like him.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a little extra makeup help.
I was going to say, to be fair, it is an actor who looks a lot like him. They did like mocap like they did for Andy Serkis in Lord of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if he was there on the day, but like he did the whole face motion capture thing. And if you see the pictures of the actual actor who did the work, he does look a lot like Tarkin. Like they probably could have gotten away with just using him, but they made the face and stuff like
a
that
little extra, which totally worked for me. I have to say Princess Leia worked a little less effectively for me.
Yeah,
I think it's because we're so familiar with her face.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's probably.
I would have been happier if they had just done the whole
shown her from behind.
Yeah, what have they brought us hope from the back.
Yeah,
that would have been enough.
Yeah, because it's especially since it's the last scene and it's a smash cut to the credits. Like, because literally my first impulse, and I was there at the midnight showing the first night, and like everybody else was just, we kind of laughed a little bit because it looked
so
weird. And you're not necessarily supposed to go like at the very end of this movie. You're supposed to be like,
from behind would have been like a nice little callback to Empire when Leia and Luke are looking out the window. I think we're so used to seeing Carrie Fisher at 19, you know, with the buns and everything, that it's such an iconic image. And she's a lot more brightly lit than Tarkin is. He's always in a lot of darkness.
Shadowy
which I think,
stuff,
Yeah. So
thank God for the Death Star aesthetic.
Yeah, it really stands out that that Leia is not actually Leia.
Yeah.
So that kind of goes into one thing I still haven't done yet that I mean to do is to watch Rogue One and then go straight into watching A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally it's like 5 minutes later.
Yeah, you guys know I watched A New Hope last week and I started to cry when Leia appeared. Like, So it's tough. Like,
oh no.
Yeah, it was tough. I was there like, yeah, I'm watching New Hope. It's going to be great, blah, blah. And like, because I think it's because like her theme comes on. I think it's on an oboe when her theme is first introduced. Yeah. So it's all just sort of like so poignant and like, you know, and I was just like, I want to die now. Like, and I got through the movie, but that first moment hit me hard. So just gonna, you can warn you.
I believe that it's,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see how the storyline of A New Hope is affected by what we, I mean, there's obviously the whole, oh, now we know why there's that flaw in the Death Star, which I thought was brilliant.
Which, I was going to say that was one of my favorite parts of like the whole Rogue One is fan fiction. It was like, oh, it's intentional.
Right.
Like that was it's genius. Sabotage. Like whoever thought that up was A plus fanfic work, dude. Like,
And for me though, and of course Tumblr has been all over this because this is just too delightful, is now the scene between Leia and Vader, the first scene, is just fucking hysterical.
I know.
Yes.
I mean, no, it really is like the diplomatic mission. She basically does the Shaggy thing. Like where she's like, it wasn't me.
Yes.
It's like, I saw you on the bathroom floor banging the girl next door. And she's like, nope.
The first time, you know, before Rogue One, that was just a really ballsy scene. Like, you know, she's going to, you know, she's brazening this out and he's, you know, how can he prove that she's wrong? Of course she's telling the truth. And now it's like, bitch, I fucking saw you.
I admire her so much more now, but
I know I mentioned this in the reacts, but I am going to mention this again, and I feel like my headcanon has almost been canonized in that I always thought that Leia was being sent to Obi-Wan to train to be a Jedi, and I feel like this, because this, it turns out that she just kind of got the Death Star plans by accident.
By accident, yeah.
Because in the original movie, you do think that she is specifically on this mission to take this, you know, the Death Star plans to Obi-Wan, which never really kind of made sense to me. And now it's like, oh, well, she just happened to have them. And it's like, oh, well, I guess I'll, you know, two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and that's the fun thing that, you know, and we get to see Bail going in that great discussion between Mon Mothma and Bail, where, you know, she's like, well, what about the Jedi? He's like, uh-huh, we're going to go get him. And I'm sending someone to go get him. And you know full well that if Leia had just shown up on Obi-Wan's doorstep, Obi-Wan would have been like, fuck. Okay.
I guess
I got to train her because look at her. It really would have been interesting to see what would have happened if that had, you know, if it had worked out that way. Just because,
I'm working on that fanfic right now.
I love you. because would he have done anything with Luke then? Because he's already got one Skywalker twin. He could be the extra instead of Leia being the extra. And I can't believe that I'm actually excited at that prospect, but, you know, it is what it is.
Think that those two could have been on the same planet and not accidentally found each other?
Probably not. They would have like run into each other and had that instant, oh, it's you, thing that they did. So we talked a little bit about the characters, but like more specifically, you know, we're getting close to the end here. What were your favorite characters? Because I know at least one of you has a favorite character that we haven't talked about.
I mean, mine's Bodhi, so we've talked about him.
Mine's Chirrut.
That's okay too, though.
Chirrut all the way.
We have not.
Oh my god! How have we not mentioned K2 yet?
Holy hatefulest, most hateful robot ever. He was great.
I love murder robots.
I just love Alan Tudyk.
Yes,
he was brilliant.
Need more Alan Tudyk.
So funny.
I'm impressed that he was like, he did mocap for that too. I didn't think he would.
On stilts.
Like, why? I don't know. But like, apparently they felt that they needed, you know, somebody there to actually do all the motions.
Well, and maybe because like his body language, his comedic body language is so great anyway.
That's true.
They probably wanted to pick that up. I know before we started recording, we talked a little bit about Orson Krennic.
Yes.
Yes. Who's my favorite. Because I haven't been able to say it yet, but yes.
That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Unapologetically. I loved him. I love a lot of the characters. I love him because he's just the worst. Yeah. And in a really hilarious way.
Like, I just always think about how, like, you know, when we first got to look at him in that majestic cape and, like, that scene that was cut of him striding through the water in his cape. And everybody's just like, oh, God, he's going to be so evil and competent and, like...
And he's basically a mid-level bureaucrat.
It just kills me. Like, the reality versus expectation with him was just amazing.
Like, it was really great.
Yeah. He tries so hard to be just so bad. In Catalyst, he goes out of his way not to remember Jin's name.
Yes, the child.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I've also heard that apparently he basically, against his will, goes and rescues Galen and Lyra at some point when they accidentally get themselves imprisoned.
No.
And he's like, fucking fine, I'll go get you. And
no,
like,
actually. No, that's no, not he the doesn't. Case. So here's the thing. And here's another ship that Rhone has fallen into.
Of course.
Right, I ship Galen with everybody, apparently. So
no, you just
two,
you just have
you shipping
ships.
Mads Mikkelsen character up. With people?
Shut up. Anyway, so these two have known each other since they were like 14 or 15 years old. Like, they were high school buddies.
Yes.
And basically the rescue that happens in Catalyst, it's almost like the Empire deliberately engineered for Galen and Lyra to be captured, and a pregnant Lyra, I might add, to get captured and to get held up by the Separatists, specifically so that they can go in and rescue them, and he and Galen, who is already a renowned scientist, like top of his field, will owe the Empire, and specifically Galen, a favor.
Mm-hmm. That's even better.
So it's like manipulation all the way through Catalyst. Like,
wow.
Krennic is so fucking obsessed with Galen, it's like frightening how fucking obsessed with Galen he is.
One thing
Galen
about Krennic that... struck me was, like, in a lot of the tie-ins so far, we've gotten some generals and admirals who sort of go into the Empire with the best of intentions because they think that they believe the Empire's propaganda about bringing order to and peace to the galaxy, and then they gradually become disillusioned. Like, Rae Sloane, I think, is on her way to being disillusioned. Sienna Ree, obviously, was very much disillusioned. But Krennic was just very much like, I know what I'm saying is bullshit. Like, he had no illusions.
Oh, he is all about the power.
Yeah.
Every single thing that he does throughout Catalyst is geared toward giving him personal power and influence within the Empire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So seeing him, like, I guess, like, literally hoisted by his own petard and, like, fucking destroyed by his weapon.
It was great.
It was amazing.
It was the best.
Yes.
It was one of the best moments of the entire movie where he's like, fuck.
And then,
it's just like, yup, suck it, nerd.
And then, best of all, he doesn't even get credit for it. Nobody remembers who he is. Everyone thinks Tarkin when they think of the Death Star.
Ah, oh, so good.
Which is exactly why Tarkin killed him.
Well, yeah. But God, no, the whole relationship between the two of them, he basically spends all of Catalyst being really pissy and having bitch fights with Lyra, just because she's married to Galen and he doesn't like
that at
all.
I was gonna say, if that doesn't sound like a bitter ex, I don't know what.
Seriously, I don't even think it's an ex. I don't even think it's an ex because Galen is too freaking oblivious. Like, in Catalyst, he's basically described as this total absent-minded scientist, and Lyra is the one who's like him right there, and he's like, oh, girl, okay. I can go along with this.
Yeah. Krennic is amazed that he got married just because he's surprised he noticed another person was alive.
Yeah, and there was no bitterness in that recognition.
I was going to say. Let me tell you, one of the biggest travesties of this movie, though, was that Lyra died because, my God, she sounded like a baller.
Yeah.
And this is the biggest reason you need to read Catalyst, because, yes, she is freaking awesome. She knows what's going down from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think one of the reasons it took so long to get the Death Star built is because she was right there cock-blocking Krennic every step he took.
Well, and then there was 15 years where she was dead. So I don't know. I think there were a lot of reasons. I've read up on the Wikipedia entry about the Death Star, and, like, apparently there were a lot of weird problems that it had, which but they reference because- in the movie where Tarkin's like, you know, you've run out of delays, or, you know, you at last it's finally done. And after all of these problems, and it's like, you don't really see any of the problems, but
you and Catalyst.
It's interesting. Well, yeah, no,
because basically
I'm
the biggest,
not going to read.
The biggest problem is that they can't. That, you know, they have the theory behind the weapon, but they can't get it to work. And the only one who can get it to work is Galen, because he's the kyber crystal expert. And so all of Catalyst is basically Krennic trying to get Galen on board with the project. But, of course, Galen is like this pure science guy who's like, no, I don't want anyone using my research for weaponry. So he tries to trick him into it, and, you know, Galen and Lyra escape with Jin at the very end of the book. I'm spoiling the hell out of everything, whatever. They escape at the very end of the book to go to the planet that we see them on at the start of Rogue One. And Krennic literally hits his knees on the ground and is screaming Galen's name up into the sky because he's escaping. It's brilliant. Wow. You can't.
Yeah, I was going to say before about Galen that in the beginning of Catalyst, he was using kyber crystals to try to solve energy crises.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he wanted to create an energy source for the galaxy.
And people say, well,
yeah, I think one of the things.
Story.
I was going to say, one of the things story. That I find really interesting about Galen and Krennic and Lyra. In kind of, and Tarkin actually, like, in a way, is that, like, these characters are all people who were adults at the time of the changeover from the Republic to the Empire, and these were people who did not fight in the Resistance, like Obi-Wan and people like that, like, or even Darth Vader, like, who chose the other side. You know, you have their kind of perspectives, but, you know, in the original movies, you have the characters who kind of grew up under the Aegis of the Empire. Even Han Solo was only like what, 10 when the Empire started, so he was
something
still a kid.
Like that, yeah,
but like you have Baze and Chirrut, you have, you know, on the other side you have the Ursos and Krennic, and you have all of these people who kind of just put their heads down and kind of got on. Well, the monks didn't, but like, you know, put their heads
you know
down
what?
And got on with it, and didn't really their lives were not hugely affected. You know, I just thought that was a really interesting kind of political commentary.
Well, the interesting as well was that we see in Catalyst basically the choices that the Ursos make of, you know, do we work with this regime or do we not? And Galen very much gets roped in initially and tries to justify his cooperation by focusing on the pure science. Like, I am I will be doing good because this energy source will be out there. And of course, he doesn't know that it's being that they're wanting to weaponize it.
Yeah.
Well, Lyra does, and that's the conflict. Lyra's like, dude, they are not just going to use this for power plants, okay?
That brings up, because if it's, you're talking, it's kyber technology, right? That brings up the thing, though, too, with, like, you have this other level of, okay, you know, getting kyber crystals destroys planets. So is it really then, you know,
and that actually is, that's also covered in Catalyst because that's how Lyra finds out what's happening is that these planets basically wind up destroyed and she's trying to find out why.
Yeah.
And at one point, Lyra also, she's not a Force user, but she is a Force appreciator.
Believer.
And, when Galen gets a bunch of kyber crystals, she points out, it's like, dude, those came out of lightsabers.
Yeah. Yeah, she recognized how they were cut and was like, these came from dead Jedi, basically.
Yeah.
Something you guys will love if you read Asuka, the way she gets new kyber crystals. You guys will love that. I want to scream with you about that whenever you read it, because it's awesome.
I need to read it because
we'll have
so much
to talk about Ahsoka at some point because
she's
awesome.
I was gonna say, can we talk about Saw Gerrera a little bit in terms of because he's apparently, and again, this is coming from somebody who hasn't watched Rebels, but he's one of the first characters to come from the cartoon show.
Yeah, he was first introduced in the Clone Wars.
A cartoon show.
So he is on Rebels now, and actually,
oh, that's like, right, he did show up.
Forrest Whitaker actually voiced him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
So we first meet him in Clone Wars, where he and his sister, God damn it, she should have lived. he and his sister are teenagers, basically, and they're engaged in a resistance on their home planet. And
seriously thought you were about to say they were engaged to each other, and I was like, God damn it.
No. There's definitely a love triangle going on with her and another character in Ahsoka, but not Jin. He was not involved. So, but they're engaged in fighting for their home planet, and the Jedi show up with the clones and basically train them on how to be better resistors.
Yeah, and there's something where, like, she gets chosen to be, like, the major leader, and he's a little jealous, but then she dies, and it's very sad. And then
she dies, and he blames everyone for it, and that's pretty much when he starts going off the rails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And becomes much more militant and much more extreme in his views.
Huh. I mean, that would do it for me.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Jin?
I was going to say, we haven't really talked about Jin at all.
Or Cassian, really, which we definitely want to talk about our little tinker soldier, sailor, spy guy.
Oh, God.
He was amazing.
See, it just feels like, I guess because I think about him all the time, I'm like, well, of course we talked about him, except we didn't.
We talked about him before we started recording.
We didn't talk about him or his love of Jabba the Hutt's texture. Which I was gonna say, which for those of you listening who don't know what we're talking about,
Diego Luna
basically is obsessed with touching Jabba the Hutt, and it's creepy but in a really cute way because it's Diego Luna. Yeah.
It's now become a thing.
Yeah. He has to discover the texture.
So yeah, we were
we'll link to some of those things.
Yeah. So, no, what we were talking about before we hit record on this, foolishly, was that Cassian's kind of a different type of rebel character than we usually have seen in the show. Although, I don't know if I'd necessarily agree with that, because we do have Luke, who killed 300,000 people.
It was closer to a million, but yeah.
Well, yes, but he still pushed the button. He pushed the button, as they say. Because the very first scene we see him in, which apparently was part of reshoots, this was not his original introduction, but in the first scene that we see him in the movie, he stabs his source, or he shoots his source, he kills his source in order to get away.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting ethical, you know, situation.
See, you know what it is? I think where some of the weirdness is coming from is, like, if you were watching, like, a James Bond movie, you wouldn't bat an eyelash. Of course that's something Bond would do, and of course it would be the quote-unquote right thing for him to do in that situation. But in a Star Wars movie, you're like, what?
You don't expect Obi-Wan or Luke to be doing that, exactly.
Right. You would never expect Luke to be like, let's see, I could get away, or you could die, bye.
But again, I mean, you would expect somebody like Han or Lando, who are still good people.
You would expect them to at least think about it. I don't think in a saga movie you would see them do it.
Yeah.
But you would see them think about it.
I think that this is actually one of the brilliant things about this movie, in that the series is called Star Wars, and they don't really get into the wars part very much. And in wars, you're going to have spies that are, you know, killing people. Because he's not just a spy. He's a fucking assassin.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's killing off his sources. He's sent to kill off Galen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That happens in wars.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. He's like Navy. He's a SEAL.
He really is. Oh my God. I think for me that kind of brings home this idea of, and this is something that is kind of a thread that goes through the entire movie, of, you know, the morally questionable action in the service of a much greater good.
Yeah.
And he does have a very telling line where he's talking to Jin, and he's like, I've been in this since I was 6. You're not the only one who lost everything.
Yeah, I did find that really interesting, and would have loved to know more about what was going on there, because it sounds like not only was he, like, you know, fighting in an abstract sense, but, like, he was literally joining up and learning how to. Yeah, exactly. During the nascent days of the rebellion, which I think is a fascinating perspective. So, but I don't know. He was also just, such a good guy. Such a good guy.
Yeah.
Like, the end where he, like, first of all, decides not to kill Galen, but then, you know, says, you know, fuck the haters, we're going to just go, you know, and steal a TIE fighter and go over to the, you know, to Scarif and steal the plans ourselves. Like, he was pretty much breaking with everything that the rebellion had told him to do and to be, because he believed that Jin could do it. Which I thought was really great. Not sure if it was 100% earned, but it was still a great moment. So,
you know, as much as I ship it, I have so much props for the filmmakers to not actually make
it explicit,
Jin and Cassian explicit, and not having them survive.
Having
this tragic, you know, unconsummated thing where all they get is a hug while they're exploding.
Yeah.
And it's just like, come on. Beautiful and tragic.
And there's the moment that they have in the elevator where they're just looking at each other, and you see there's somebody did a gift set of that almost poem, you know, the saddest word in the world is almost. With those two, and it really is kind of apropos for them, because they could have been a Han and Leia type love story, but they just didn't have time.
Yeah. And the thing about the moment in the elevator is that you see them both realize it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we're probably not going to make out of this, but boy, if we had, this could have been something. And
Well, and that moment where he says, "Do you think there's anybody up there?" And she says, "I do." When the first time I saw it, I thought that they meant, like, do you think anybody's going to come get us?
Yeah.
And then when I saw it the next time, I was like, nope, they don't care. They really don't. They don't think that they're going to survive it, and they're fine with that. They just want to. They're hoping that somebody intercepted their message.
Yeah.
That's what they were talking about.
When they're on the beach and we see the explosion headed their way, I swear, the first time I saw that, I spent that entire sequence on the edge of my seat going, and someone's going to show up, right? And someone's going to show up, right?
Yep, nope.
There's going to be a ship right behind him any second now. Last second rescue. Okay, you're running out of time. There has to be a last second rescue, and then no.
No, it was. Go ahead. Sorry, I was gonna say one of my friends got to see it like a week early, and I ordered her basically at gunpoint to spoil me, and she said everybody dies, and I was like, yeah, okay.
I was so surprised they did that. I thought that Bodhi was gonna get out
because he was in the ship, he had a ship.
But as soon as that ship blew up, I'm like, oh my god, they're doing it! Yeah. Like, no one's getting out alive.
That was my moment too. I knew that Chirrut and Baze were going to die, and I wasn't surprised that K2SO died. But as soon as Bodhi died, I was like, oh fuck.
It's interesting because for me, it was when K2SO. I mean, again, I knew, but like when he died, like I was like. Because it's kind of, I don't know, I feel like the droids are a little bit like dogs in the movies, where like, you can kill everybody you want. BB-8 is never going to get killed.
Oh my god, no.
Like, R2-D2 is never going to get killed. Yeah. Like, there are just some characters you don't kill. Yeah. And I felt like, you know, even K2, as hateful as he was, still had, you know, droid immunity, but then I was just like, oh no, now the massacre starts. Okay, who's next? But yeah, and everybody's death was different and heartbreaking, but still really weirdly heartening.
Yeah.
Meaningful. This is the thing. This is the only movie I can imagine where the entire fucking cast dies. And the last line of the movie is hope. And you buy it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, yes, that's very hopeful. I feel very hopeful right now.
Yeah.
Just on the topic of Jin and hope, I did find it a little strange that Jin was, you know, pushing the whole hope line so hard because she was the turn between her being really jaded and then becoming idealistic was just a bit too fast for me.
That was pretty fast.
It was non-existent. You didn't see it. Like, literally, the conversation was between, she was yelling at Cassian for nearly murdering her dad, which, legit, I completely am on her side with that one. And then the next scene is her arguing in front of a council, and I just didn't see where she, like, if, like, she'd had a conversation with Chirrut, or, you know, if the conversation between her and Bodhi had happened then, where he said, you know, your father told me I just had to listen to what was in my heart, you know, that would have been a great moment for her to be like, oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, but they didn't quite, again, like, but apparently a lot of the reshoots were Jin centric. They were trying to make her more likable because apparently the first pass she was seen as a bit too mean.
Oh,
I don't know.
Because she's too hard because
she doesn't collapse when she listens to her father's message, apparently. Yeah.
I really wish we had seen that original cut. I would love to see that original cut.
Well, do you know what? Star Wars fan edits are super popular, so maybe we'll see some fan edits of Rogue One where they cut out some of the, you know,
craziness.
All we need is hope.
So. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, yeah. I think I totally bought in some universe. Like, I liked her speech to the council. Mm-hmm. I just didn't recognize the Jin character that I had seen for the past 2 hours.
Right.
In
there
it.
Needed to be like another step or two in there to get us from. You know, you asshole, you almost killed my dad.
Exactly.
And not only that, but the Alliance killed my dad.
Yeah.
To, okay, now we all have to fight together kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to chalk this up to people not understanding how to write female characters.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I could buy that.
Yeah, there was not a single woman who had any hand in writing any of this dialogue or plot. Like, Kathleen Kennedy, please get on this, because it's embarrassing at this point.
I'm not sure I trust her either.
I don't trust her as far as I can.
I like her fine. I think she's doing a really good job comparatively to how, I mean, this could be going in a very Marvel direction, and so far it's not. But, you know, she could be doing better.
She's better than she than some, but she still has some work to do, because she has a very, 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 very white feminist outlook.
Yeah.
And it's starting to show in a lot of her comments and in some of the casting. I guess, like, to sum up, if you had to pick, like, one moment in this movie, like, what was your favorite moment or, like, the most compelling moment, defining moment, however you want to put it, like, what's your one moment from this movie?
I think my favorite moment was when Chirrut introduces himself with the fighting. When he just steps out randomly and he's just like, I'm not gonna take out these troopers just because.
I know, I was so bummed there wasn't any, like, tumbleweed going past in the distance. Such a high noon moment.
I mean, there's some really great moments in this, but that one, I think, is my favorite.
It's pretty great. I think it wasn't necessarily my favorite moment or my defining moment, but the moment when I knew this was going to be a slightly different type of Star Wars movie was at that very beginning when Lyra pops up from where she'd been hiding, and Krennic is like, oh, look, it's Lyra back from the dead. It's a miracle. Yeah. And I was just like, is a Star Wars movie supposed to make me laugh? Like, what's happening? And all of the beats that were just really hilarious of, like, you know, I don't need luck, I've got you, and, like, are you kidding, I'm blind, and, like, all of those kind of moments of just real, like, and it felt like organic humor was my favorite part of the movie.
I know this is really bleak, but for me, the moment that just sums up this movie and just has ingrained this movie in my head is that last scene on the beach with Cassian and Jin.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous scene.
It's gorgeous, but it's horrible. These two people, it's just, they're looking at each other. They know they're going to die. They don't know for certain that what they're dying for was successful, but they're hoping that it was. And just the way that they're looking at each other and they're just, and there's no dialogue, and I'm getting choked up. It was just this amazing, amazing moment for me of just, like, it's again, I'm baffled that a movie where everyone dies came out feeling so hopeful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On a slightly less dramatic, well, no, I can't say less dramatic moment. On a slightly less melancholy note, in a, of course he did that moment, Vader's scene at the very end.
Fuck yes, I was gonna mention that.
We didn't even talk about the Vader scene, the earlier Vader scene where he puns.
Oh god,
I hate
of course
scene.
He does.
Forget that exists.
It was so
but
great.
But the scene at the end, you can't.
Oh my god, that's such a baller scene.
That is like such a fucking Anakin thing to do. Like, I'm gonna hide here in the dark and then come kick your asses.
And turn off my respirator equipment, yeah. Which glows in the dark, by the way.
So I can hide.
Skywalker dramatics.
Yeah. Classic Skywalker dramatics.
Everybody in this movie is so fucking dramatic.
No. I would say this to Chirrut's last scene, his last stand. The faith involved and just the that's all I have to say.
And wasn't he like smiling too? Like he just knew that he was gonna do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for having this discussion. I know we're probably not done talking about Rogue One. So I'm sure we're gonna go into characters more in detail at some point.
Yep.
So stay tuned. Thanks everybody.
Still in theaters, there aren't many fan videos yet. However, one stands out, cleverly utilizing the small amount of footage currently available. There is probably no media that fits the Hamilton soundtrack better than Rogue One, with both stories featuring a group of rebels fighting for freedom. The video, Who Tells Your Story, by Shadow Glamper, perfectly uses Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story to show the important sacrifice the Rogue One team makes. It's a heart-rending video that makes so much out of so little.
That wraps up episode 9 of the Trash Compactor podcast. We'd like to thank April and Lepigus for joining us again for the Rogue One discussion. Join us next month, where we're going to be talking about the Aftermath trilogy. The final book is coming out very, very soon. And I can tell you, I know that April's excited about it, and I know I'm excited about it.
I'm excited about it, too.
Oh, I can't wait to see what happens. Yeah. I'm so excited. I love Nora Wexley so much.
Yes.
I'm like, yay. So one of the things that I found really interesting, you know, we mentioned the Women's March in the news, was seeing like just how much Carrie Fisher and Princess Leia iconography there was at the women's marches around the world.
Yeah, no, I mean, there were people dressed up. There were signs all over the place. She's definitely had such a profound impact on feminism, both as Princess Leia and as Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, and my use of the word iconography is deliberate because it really does feel like, I mean, I know people have joked on Tumblr about her, you know, getting her canonized and, you know, our Saint Carrie, but it really does feel that way. It has that sort of deep emotional and spiritual attachment to who she was.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's been so amazing to see. It really caught me off guard.
Mm-hmm.
I did okay with not crying right up until the point that I saw the tweet that Mark Hamill sent about it, where he was like, you know, I know what she stood for and you know what she stood for. It just, you know, with all these pictures of all, you know, all the signs and the women who were dressed up, and I don't know, it's just, it keeps hitting me, you know.
Yeah.
I keep thinking that I'm okay, and then stuff like that happens. But it really is, I think you got to think that she would be very pleased to see that we're using her image to kick people in the teeth who deserve to be kicked in the teeth,
yeah.
I guess. And that's about as political as I think I'm going to get on the podcast.
Yeah.
But
yeah, this is the kind of stuff that makes me realize that Carrie's going to live forever. Like, not just through the movies, but through people using her spirit to, you know, fight the patriarchy.
Well, yeah. I mean, a friend of mine on Tumblr, I'll name her, I think she'll be fine with that, Lightside Calling, has a tag on her blog that she's now using that's WWCD, you know, What Will Carrie Do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just having that thought is remarkably inspiring, you know, both as somebody who has dealt with mental illness and also, you know, the whole feminism thing, is just stopping to think, okay, how would she handle this?
Mm-hmm.
It really is kind of, I have no way to segue into anything. I'm just kind of having an emotional moment here. I think this is because I missed the round table that you guys had. I didn't have a chance to ramble about my feelings.
It's all right. Yeah. Well, speaking of living forever, I really wanted to bring this up because I absolutely love this and it just hit me in the feels and it really fits with the round table we just did. Simpaiko, who is a friend of the podcast and actually is the one who kind of started the whole, you know, fucking in in ships thing.
Senpaiko is the one who wanted to know about fucking in X-Wings, yeah. And that just led to our downfall. Yeah.
She has previously done artwork for us, and she did not do this artwork specifically for us, but I did want to call out that she had done this. She recently did a gorgeous piece of the Rogue One cast, and it's an AU. where they survived the end of the movie. And
it's the most common AU. They lived.
Yeah. And Scarif is instead become this tropical resort. So they're all like with like the coconut drinks and the Lays. And it's so cute.
Damn it, Bodhi deserved a drink after all that.
Yes.
I mean, they all did. But...
And Baze has flowers braided into his hair. And I was like, who did that for him? And it was like, his husband, of course.
You know, if anybody needs flower crowns, I mean, I'm not real big on the whole flower crown thing, but if anybody needs flower crowns, it's Baze and Chirrut.
Yes.
I mean, really. So we will have to post a link to that because I have seen it and it's the sweetest, most lovely, like, this is the ending these guys deserve,
yes,
thing ever. I it's gonna be a while before I'm over Rogue One, man.
It's so great. I think the fact that it is so different than the saga movies,
the Skywalker saga,
yeah, it's so different than that in that it just totally stands alone and all of your feelings are released in that one particular movie. I mean, there's a couple of things where it's like, oh, this reminds me of, you know, this Skywalker saga movie, but like all of the characters, I mean, as we said, they all die, so
right.
you are made to care about them and grieve for them all in the same movie.
Yeah, and there is no question about, wow, what will they go on to do after this?
Yeah,
because there's nothing.
Unfortunately, we didn't get any reactions to Carrie Fisher's death last month, and we're chalking that up to the fact that everybody was very emotional and got out their feelings on Tumblr already by the time we got the episode up. But we would love to get reactions from everyone on Rogue One, on the title, The Last Jedi. So you can drop us a line on Tumblr at trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com, on Twitter at swtrashpodcast, our website trashcompactorpodcast.com, or email thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com.
Come back in a month and we'll be talking about Chuck Wendig's Aftermath trilogy, which wraps up very soon, and we'll find out what happens with Nora Wexley and Snap and Mr. Bones, everyone's favorite murder droid. Second favorite murder droid now, maybe. favorite still living murder droid.
You know, I have a sneaking suspicion Snap might live.
You know, there's a small chance that Snap might, in fact, make it through the third book. You're right. There's just something about him that says he's going to live.
Yeah.
But come back next month and we'll find out.